This morning's cheer is a yardside cheer in memory of my daughter, Abigail Kira. And the cheer's title is Excessive Mourning and Teshuvah. So when I was first preparing this cheer, I was a little nervous because it's an intense topic. And I thought, you know, after Purim, before Pesach, maybe I should give cheer on something a little more cheery, upbeat. But somehow it worked out that my cheer is appropriate for this time, unfortunately. So I'm going to try to give this cheer and give some insight into the Rambam. He's going to be the main source for this cheer. So the goal of this cheer is to understand the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Avel, Perek Yud Gimel. And I'm going to go through a couple of halachos, the last three halachos, and ask a lot of questions. If you have any questions on the phone line, you know, just try to unmute yourselves and ask. If you have any questions on my questions, you can always unmute and ask. But I'm not going to give definitions until the end of the shiur. So I'm kind of going to build an idea as to what the Rambam is saying through all the questions that I ask. And we'll look through some of the sources as well, and then hopefully we'll come back to a broader idea and a broader insight into what the Rambam is trying to hint at. So if you look in the first source on the Mar Mekomo sheet is Hilchos Avel Perek Yud Gimel. And the Rambam says, Ein bochen al hameis yaser mishloshi yamim, ve'ein maspidin yaser mishiva, bamed dvar mamurim bishar am, aval tamidei chachamim hakol lefi chachmason. So the Rambam starts in the Halacha Yud by saying that you're not supposed to cry over a death more than 3 days, and you shouldn't cry, be maspid, eulogize more than 7 days. But what is that referring to? By a regular person who dies, most people. But if a Talmud Chacham dies, then it's all based on the Chachma, so it could be longer. V'ein bochen aleihem yoser mishloshim yom, shein lanu gadol mimoshe rabbeinu, uchsiv v'yitmu yimei b'chi evil Moshe, v'chein ein maspidin yaser al shnei masar chodesh, ein lanu v'chachma gadol m'rabbeinu akadosh shnei masar chodesh v'lvan nisvan. So even though you're allowed to cry and be maspid for a Talmud Chacham more than 3 days or 7 days for Hesped, but we have a rule that it shouldn't be more than 30 days of Bechi, because Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest, and we didn't cry for him over 30 days. And so too, by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, they weren't maspid him more than 12 months. So there's a shear, there's a limit to how much you're allowed to cry for a Talmud Chacham. And then at the end it says, and so too, if a chacham dies, but you don't hear about it until 12 months later, you should not be maspid the person. So just to summarize this first halacha, the Rambam says that in general, you're not allowed to cry more than 3 days, and you're not allowed to be maspid more than 7 days. But the exception is by Talmidei Chachamim, where you can go beyond the regular shear. But even with Talmud Chacham, even with a great person, there's a limit to how long you can be bokeh for, how long you can cry for them, and that's 30 days, and we learn that from Moshe. And so too by Hesped, we learn 12 months from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and then the last part of the halacha talks about if you hear about a death 12 months of a chacham 12 months ago, you're not supposed to be mastered. So I have a couple questions on this halacha that I'm going to start with. And if anybody else has any questions, again, unmute yourself. So the first question is, what's the difference between Talmud Chacham and a regular person? Why aren't there hard rules as to how long you're allowed to be Misabel? It should be 3 days for everybody, for Bechi, and 7 days for Hesped. So why do we make an exception for Talmud Chacham? What's the idea? Why are we allowed to do that? So that's one question. And the second question is, why is there a time limit for Talmud Chacham? Now, why can't you just go on and on and on? Why do we say 30 days? I know we have a proof from Moshe and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi as to how long you can be misabel for, but the question is, philosophically, what is the concept of there being a limit by Talmidei Chachamim? So those are the first two questions that I have on this first halacha. So we'll start with those, and then we'll go on to the next halacha and the halacha after. But again, I'm going to go through all the questions again, and then hopefully come up with a chiddush at the end that'll put everything in perspective. So the second halacha is halacha Yud Aleph. The Rambam says, "Al yiskasha adam ameso yaser midai." A person is not supposed to be too bothered, or it shouldn't be too hard for him when he mourns for a mace. It shouldn't be too much. Shenamar, al tifku lemace ve'al tanudu lo. So the pasuk is in Yirmiyahu, And it says that a person should not cry for a mace, and they shouldn't shake their head or lament. Klomar, yasser midai shezehu min hagel shel olam. So what does that mean? It means it shouldn't be excessive, because this is the pattern of the world. Death is normal. It's the pattern of the world. The hametzar atlo yoser amin hagel shel olam hareza tipesh. Anybody who causes himself harm, excessive harm, over a mace, since it's the norm, it's part of the pattern of the world, it's minhag shel olam, so they're foolish. Elakated yasa, so what is the prescription? Shlosha levechi, shiva lehefbed, shloshim yom letesporah, shlo shara chamisha dvarim. So the prescription is that a person is supposed to cry for 3 days, be maskit for 7 days, and 30 days for all the other minhag avelos. So the Rambam, just to summarize this halakha, the Rambam says that you're not supposed to be torn up excessively over a mace. And the reason why, he says, is because this is part of the pattern of the world. It's minhag ha'olam. It doesn't make sense. He says you're a tipesh. And then he goes on and he says, what's the prescription? Same as above. 3 days for a regular, 3 days for crying, 7 days for hesped, and 30 days for the other minhagei avelos, shloshim. So now there's a couple questions on this halakha as well. So I'll just raise the questions. So one question is, it seems kind of strange that the Rambam says you're a tipesh. So what exactly is the nature of this flaw, that you're a tipesh? Why does he use that? He doesn't say you get onesh, you're punished, which we'll see later on in the Gemara. It makes it even harder to understand the Rambam. But what exactly is the flaw? Can we pinpoint the flaw of yasser midai? And if it's so, like, if it doesn't make any sense at all, if it's dumb, so why are we mourning? Why are we misabel? I mean, he says that it's the minhag shel olam. So why isn't it that if somebody dies, we should just say, okay, this is the pattern of the world. People die and move on. And why is this prescription of 3 days for bechi and 7 days for hesped, why is that even allowed? Why is that a good? And the third question on this halakha is, it seems like the halakhos are kind of out of order. Because the Rambam in Halacha Yud says, "Ein boken al meis yasser mishloshi yamim, ve'ein maspidin yasser mishiva." And then in Halacha Yud Aleph, he says that you're not supposed to be miskasha yosser midai, and what's the prescription? 3 days and 7 days of hesped. So in Halacha Yud, what exactly is the problem? Isn't the same problem of yasser midai when you do more? So why doesn't this halacha come before, where it explains why a person shouldn't be bocha more than 3 days and more than 7 days? Like in Halacha Yud at the beginning, it says, "Ein bochin al meis yasser mishloshi yamim ve'ein maspidin yasser mishiva." So what's the reason why you can't do that? I mean, if the reason is because that's considered yiskash al meis yasser midai, so then this Halacha Yud Aleph should be before Halacha Yud. It seems like it's out of order, or it seems like the Rambam doesn't make sense in that way, because if he's explaining the flaw of excessive mourning as being more than 3 days and more than 7 days for hesped, so that should go earlier in Halacha Yud. So the question is, why is this kind of out of order? What's the difference between the two halachos? And then the last halacha on the Rambam, and then you guys can, on the phone line, anybody on the phone line can ask more questions, but the last halacha on the Rambam is halacha yibbez. So it says, "Kol mi she'enu mis'abel kimo she'tivu chacham harei zeh achzari." Anybody who doesn't follow this prescription of, it seems like he's saying the prescription of 3 days of bechi and 7 days of hesped, so you're considered a cruel person. So what should he do? Ella yifchad v'yidag v'yifachish v'matzav yaster v'tshuva. So what you should do is you should be concerned, worried, and then you should do tshuva. The echad mivnei chabura shemeis tidag kol chabura kula. If you have a group of friends and somebody dies in that group, the whole group of friends should be worried. Kol shloshi yamim harishonim yiras atzmo k'ilu cherv muneches lo al tzavaro. The first 3 days, which corresponds to the 3 days of bechi, are the days where a person should envision that there's a sword against his neck. When we slow Shavat Shiva, ilu ki muneches bekeren zavis. And then from 3 to 7, you should envision that there's a sword in the corner out to get you. Become elach ilu overas kenegdo b'shuk. And then after that, when you're walking around in the marketplace, you should every once in a while see this, this sword passing by, and that should make you afraid. And he says, "Kol zev l'hachin atzmo v'yasor v'yeir mishinaso." The whole purpose of this is that a person prepare themselves and awaken from their slumber. V'arehu omer hikisa osam v'lochalu mechlash etarach l'hakitz v'lochol. And another pasuk from Yirmiyahu, it says that you've hit them, and they don't tremble. And the response should be that a person should be awake and they should tremble when a bad thing happens like this. So the third set of questions that I have on the Rambam are why is the opposite extreme inappropriate? It's the same question as before, so I'm kind of doubling it up. But if the idea is that Minhag Shel Olam, so what's the problem with not being Misabel, and what exactly is the flaw of an Achzari? And the last question, which I think is a powerful question, is what kind of idea is this illusion that we're supposed to believe or imagine that there's a sword against us? I mean, we don't really know how Hashgacha works precisely, but are we really supposed to believe that we're subject to death because somebody in our family dies or because somebody in a group of friends dies? Is that how Hashgacha works? Is this really a reflection of reality that we really should be scared because now our lives are in danger? Or is this an illusion that we're supposed to imagine? And what's the purpose of this? You know, why are we supposed to imagine something in this situation of such a nature? So that's the question. So let me just summarize all the questions, and then if anybody else has anything to say, just unmute. So again, we have three halachos. The first halacha introduces us to the difference, the nature of avelus of 3 days and 7 days, 3 days of bechi, 7 days of hesped, and then it differentiates between a talmud chacham and a regular person. But even with a talmud chacham, there's a limit. So the questions we had were, what's the difference between a talmud chacham and a regular person, and why is there a limit? Then the Rambam goes on to explain that there's a flaw, that you're not supposed to be, there's no excessive mourning that's allowed. And he says the prescription is that it's 3 days of Bechi and 7 days of Hesped and then Shloshim. And he says the reason is because you're a tipesh, you're a fool, you're dumb, because this is the pattern of the world. So the question is, you know, what kind of flaw is that you're just dumb? And furthermore, why should we be misabel at all? This is the pattern of the world. What's that idea? And then the last of the questions is on the last halacha, which is, the other question is, what's this order in halachos? Because the first halacha introduces this idea of not being misabel more than 3 days or 7 days. So why is this, isn't that miskasha, yes, yasser midai on a mace? And then the last set of halachos, which is halachia beis, or the last set of questions, is what is the other extreme of afzari? And what is the nature of this illusion that we're supposed to imagine that there's a sword against our necks? Is that a reflection of reality that we really are in danger because for some reason the Hashgacha is out to get us? Or is there some other idea there? Is there some other concept that we can give for why we're supposed to imagine that? All right. Are we good? Any questions? All right. Excellent. Can somebody just speak up so that I know that people can hear me?
We're good.
Hey, Ari.
All right, good. Excellent. Thank you.
I can hear you. Yeah, I have you.
All right, excellent.
All right. Right, again, Burkett has a question. It's kind of similar to the one you've already asked, but how are you learning the Talmud Chacham? Are you learning it's like a different shear in what Yasser Midai would be?
I'm learning that it's got to be a different idea or a different flaw or a different problem by Talmud Chacham. And it doesn't fall under the category of Yasser Midai. So that's kind of going into the answer. But yeah, that was part of my question. What's the difference between the two halachos? Why, if there's an idea of excessive mourning, and that's the flaw of Miskasha Yasser Midai, so why doesn't that apply to a Talmud Chacham? So that's part of the question. Is there a different idea there by a Talmud Chacham? Why wouldn't it apply?
Right, and also let's say you did a Talmud Chacham longer than 12 months or 30 days of Bechi or whatever it is.
Right.
Would that be the same flaw as Yasser Midai, or is that like its own, a different problem?
Right, so I think we'll come to an answer, hopefully, by the end of the year. But yeah,
okay.
It's a good question. Yeah, excellent.
Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi Zimmer. That was Rabbi Zimmer, right?
Yeah.
All right. So I just want to go through the psukim that the Rambam quotes first. I'll just try to explain them on a shot level. And then I think the method that I'm going to use is go to the Gemaras that the Rambam learned out these halachos from and try to see how the Rambam is learning these Gemaras, because some of the Gemaras seem very different than the Rambam's interpretation. So first, just look through the psukim. So if you look in source number 2, the first pasuk the Rambam quotes is by Yasser Midai, and he quotes a pasuk by Yirmiyahu, and it says, "Al tifku l'meis v'al tanudu lo, v'cho v'cho v'holeich, ki lo yashiv od, v'ra es eretz molato." So the pasuk says that you're not supposed to mourn for a mate and lament the mate. You should cry for the person who's leaving, because he's never going to come back and he'll never see the land of his the land that he was born in. So what is this talking about? Just the pshat is, if you look at the Radak, he gives you a good pshat, and he says al tifku lemeis lemishi yamos bebeis David shizachar. So don't mourn for the person who died from Beis David, v'hu Yehoyakim. This is referring to Yehoyakim shemeis bederech kishotziu oso miyushalayim lahagloso. So he died on his way out of Yerushalayim into Golus. Amar, it says, al tifku lo, don't cry for this guy. Kevan shemeis tovu mishiyig lev yichye chai tzara vizayon kimo Yehoyachin. Don't cry for this guy who's dying, because at least he doesn't have to endure a life of pain and suffering and degradation like Yehoyachin. So there's two guys. There's Yehoyakim and Yehoyachin. So Yehoyakim is the one who died, and Yehoyachin is the one who lives, but he goes on to Golus, and he has a terrible life. So the pasuk is saying, why are you crying for the person who's dying? It's better to die than to be Yehoyachin. The Amar, ba'avur Yehoyakim, al tizku v'al tanudu lo, ki tova hi lo misaso. Don't cry for him so much, because it's better for him. Elami roi shetivku, who should you cry for? Lami shaholech begolus, he who is going into Golus. Ki lo yashivod, he'll never go back to Eretz Molato. V'ra'at Eretz Molato, he'll never go back and see the land of his birth. V'zehu Yehoyachin, this is Yehoyachin, shehiglu osel the Bavel. He was exiled to Bavel. V'sham meis. V'hayu b'veis hakel lamed zayin shana. He died there, so he never got to go back there to Yisrael. And he was in the prison for 37 years, pretty harsh life. Lo roi livkos. So for that guy, he's the person you should cry for. Don't cry for the dead person. It's better to die than to be Yehoyachin. V'darshu rizal al tifku l'meis yoser midai. V'al tanudulo yoser miyachashir. Ha-ketad shloshu l'vachish v'al hespid shloshu l'geyot l'tisporis. V'almar b'cho b'cho l'holeich v'lo banim. B'cho mekor b'vav v'malkom hei lamed apal. So our doc says, the pshat is that we shouldn't be so excessively mourning or mourn for Yehoyakim, because his death is better than Yehoyachin, who's going to live a life of pain and suffering. And then he goes on to explain the lima that the Gemara learns out from this pasuk, which is what we mentioned in the Rambam, that you're not supposed to mourn excessively. There's a limit to how much you're supposed to mourn in general. Okay, so I think just the idea for the Radak, just the basic idea for the Pshat, and I think it'll fit in ultimately into the Rambam's idea, but I think the Rambam's a little deeper, is that he's saying that sometimes we have a misperception of death relative to life, and we think that death is the ultimate evil, and that's how our psyches perceive it. But the pshat is that, no, in certain situations, it's better to die than to live. So al tifku lemeis al tanudulo is teaching us that you shouldn't have an inappropriate idea of death relative to life, because there are situations where death is the better end. And we don't think like that. Our nature is to think, no, death is the worst. It's the end. And it's the worst situation or state of man. But the reality is the other way. That's what the Radak is teaching us. The reality is that it's better to be dead in certain situations than to be alive in a terrible situation. So that's the pshat of the Radak, which I think is a nice idea on its own. The concept of how we perceive death and our nature of perceiving death as the ultimate evil, the ultimate end. But on the other hand, we have to put it in perspective, and death relative to a life in jail and suffering is really better. And that's what the Radak's saying, and I think there's a tie into the Rambam. But again, I just want to build up the shir. I know that I like the suspense of building up the shir, but also I think there's more depth that we can add to what the Rambam is saying. Even though there is a relationship between the Radak and the Rambam is saying something similar when he says that it's minhago shel olam, this is just the nature of the world. But I want to go deeper in the Rambam. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you're saying that even though death seems pretty bad, but the fact that relative to death, there's such a thing as life, there could be a life worse than death. Somehow that makes it that death is, I shouldn't be so upset about death because there's something even worse.
Yeah, that's the pshat. The pshat is that we perceive death psychologically as being the worst, but that's an irrational perspective. The true perspective should be that, death could be a better situation for man. I mean, it is a better situation for man than being alive and being suffering and pain. So, yeah, that's what I think the Radak's saying.
I mean, that's like some sort of consolation that you don't get so worked up, the fact that there could be something even worse, even though exactly. that seems pretty bad, but just relative
yeah.
to what could have been.
It's not consolation. It's reality. It's not that. Yeah, it's just saying the more rational, I guess, the more honest perspective is that death in certain situations is not really the worst case scenario. There are much worse. Being tortured, having a terrible life is worse. So we have a misperception of death. I think it's psychological as being the worst, but the Radak is saying, based on the pasuk, that that's not necessarily true rationally. It's not necessarily the worst. Okay? All right. The next pasuk, I just want to quote in the Rambam quotes, and then we'll get into the Gemaras, which are very interesting, fascinating Gemaras. The next pasuk is in Yirmiyahu as well. It's Perek Hei, Pasuk Gimel, and it's the end of the Rambam. In Halakha Yud Beis, he says that you're supposed to have this idea that there's a sword on your neck and the sword in the room and the sword in the shuk. And he quotes this pasuk from Yirmiyahu, who says, Hashem inecha lo le'emuno ikiso esam lo chaluk, lisem ma'anu kachas musar, chizku p'neam misela ma'anu lashuk. So he says, Hashem, your eyes look for integrity. You hit them. This is all from Safaria, by the way. You hit them and they don't feel pain. Kilisem, you consume them and they don't take musar. And they harden their faces, misela, like a rock, and more than a rock, and they don't go back, they don't do tshuva. So Yirmiyahu's criticism of how the Jews respond. And the Radak, again, he gives a slip shot. I'll just read the Radak. He says, Amar Navi, Tmi al Zainyan, Amar Derech Kriya, Hashem Einecha Halol Emuna. So it's kind of like a question. Klomar hashgachasa ba'olam halol emuna. Klomar ledavar kaim lo ledavar batel. Isn't the hashgacha that your divine intervention isn't it to produce something that's kayam and not to just be nullified and be worthless? Bnei kiso sam amaseim arayim. You hit them on their evil deeds. V'lo chalu. They're not affected by it. Klomar lo kaavu. V'lo hergishu ba'atzlam. The Jews they're not affected by your hashgacha, the negative hashgacha. Ki ata makeh osam ba'avonam, you're hating them because of their sins. In kain mahu ilu hashgachasra b'hem, what's the purpose of your hashgacha? That's what the Navi's asking. The doma l'masha amar l'shavi kitzis mecha musar l'lakachu v'chein masha amar Yishaya Navi al matuku otosivusara. So this pasuk in Yirmiyahu is saying that the Rambam quotes is saying that it's inappropriate to just ignore something that happens that's negative, and you're just ignoring the potential for hashgacha. And he says, why are you he's asking Hashem, why do you give this hashgacha? Why do you give even bad things? Why do bad things happen? And the Jews aren't affected by it. What's the purpose of actually bringing your hashgacha and divine intervention if nobody's going to respond appropriately? So that's the question of Yirmiyahu. That's what bothers him. And this is the pasuk that's used in the Rambam to teach us the idea that a person is supposed to do tshuva and they're supposed to wake up from their slumber. So just wanted to bring that in. So he's basically saying the pshat is that you have to utilize opportunities for tshuva. It's a criticism of the Jewish people that they don't utilize opportunities for tshuva when hashgacha emerges in the world, and that we have to do that. We have to use these situations. Okay, fine. So we have the pshat, all the questions, everything's out on the table. Let's get to even more questions, deeper questions. So there's an interesting Gemara. If you look on the next stop, it's the source for the Rambam and this halacha of Yasher Midai. And this Gemara makes it a lot more troublesome how to understand the Rambam. So it's look at the Gemara. It's the Moed Katan Das Chaf Zayin Amud Beis. It's source number 6. He says, "Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Kol Miskasha Al Meso Yasher Midai Al Meis Acher Hu Boka." So the Gemara says that if a person mourns excessively, they will mourn for another mace. So it's pretty ominous that excessive mourning is pretty bad. And if you are mourning excessively too much, miskasha yosemi die, so you will have somebody else will die. Hahi, and then there's a story to corroborate this statement. Hahi isusa the havas b'shehuse de Rav Huna. There was a woman who lived in the neighborhood of Rav Huna. Havula shiva bani. She had 7 children. Meis chad minahu. So one of them died. One of her sons died. She was really crying, and she was really upset, and she was crying a lot, too much. Don't do this. But she didn't listen to him. So Rav Huna basically told her to stop crying so much. So then he said to her, if you stop now, then fine, then good. Prepare the shrouds for another death. Umisu kulu, all of her sons died. It's pretty harsh. So Rav Huna says to her, you better stop crying so much over the death of your son. And if you don't stop, you're going to have more meisim, more deaths, and all of her sons died. L'sof amar la, and then Rav Huna said to her, Timush zevatzel benafshich, so prepare your own shrouds. Umisa, and then she died. Al tifku l'meis v'al tanudu lo, al tifku l'meis yosem yidai v'al tanudu lo yosem echashir. And then the Gemara, answers, what's the flaw here? It's that a person's not supposed to mourn too much, just like the Rambam and the pasuk that the Rambam quotes, where he gets his halakha from this Gemara. And ha-ketzad, shloshal yamim le-bechi, what's the appropriate response? 3 days for bechi, shiva le-hesped, 7 days for hesped, shloshal le-geos of this forest, mikam ve-ilech, amar kash baruch hu. And then beyond that, Hashem says, i-atem rachmanim bo yosur mimeni, don't be more merciful than me. Meaning that the Torah prescribes the appropriate level of mercy. That's how the Gemara is describing Avelis. And it says that the appropriate level is 3 days and 7 days. So don't be too much of a Rachamon. It's just strange Lashon. So this Gemara is very troublesome because it seems like it's very much, very harsh. The punishment to this woman, I mean, her son died. And Rav Huna is basically saying, stop crying. And I mean, it's our nature to cry when a child dies. That's normal, but it seems pretty harsh that everyone dies because this woman's crying too much. So what exactly is the flaw here? And also, what's this last point of Yatzam Rachmanim Bo Yosar Mimeni? It's a strange type of lashon. It should just say don't do it, or it's inappropriate. What is the idea of being a Rachman, or don't be more of a Rachman than Hashem? That's the question. So the Ritva gives a nice idea for this. And he has his own svara for what the problem with Miskasha Yosemidai is. So look at the Ritva in source number 7. It says, Kol makshal meso yosemidai, al meis acher hu bocha. So anyone who's mourning excessively, it's too hard for them, they're suffering, another meis will die, and then they'll have to cry again. Hirish, the Nira Kimishim is Onian Aladayan, Vikori Tagar, Ulfichach, Pinkaso, Niftachas, Lefanov. So, what's the flaw? He says the flaw is that it looks like you're mourning over the judgment and you're complaining. You're creating a complaint. This is not fair. And once you do that, so then the books open up for you and bye bye you. So, you get punished as well. So, what is the Rifa saying? It sounds like the Rifa at least is giving a serious flaw here to explain the seriousness of the Onesh, and he seems to be saying that it's a Chil Hashem. I think that's how you define the Rifa, that he's saying that when a person is crying excessively, basically what it looks like and what they're doing is that they're questioning the justice of the death. And when you cry excessively, there's an implication that it's not fair, that it's not just, and that's a Chil Hashem. That's a potential for a Chil Hashem, because you're implying that Hashem isn't just. So that's why, or that would kind of explain why there's such a harsh judgment on this woman and her kids. The reason is because she and her kids are a source of Chil Hashem. She is questioning the justice of Hashem. And that is the flaw of Miskasha Yasser Midai. And that's what the Ritva Shita is. The Ritva Shita is that it's a flaw of Chil Hashem. So that's one way you can explain it, that the problem with being Miskasha Yosemi Dial Meso and mourning excessively is that you're questioning the justice of Hashem, and that's inappropriate. However, the Rambam is a problem, because the Rambam learns out from this Gemara, and he does not seem like he's taking the same approach at all. I mean, he does not give that reason. And also, the Rambam does not seem as harsh as the Gemara at first glance in the Rambam. The Rambam seems to say you're just a fool, and he doesn't bring down the seriousness of this at all. Like, it doesn't. The Rambam himself doesn't seem to imply the seriousness. If you look back in the Rambam, he says, "Vamitzar atmo yester al minhago shalolam harezet tipech." You're just a fool. But the Gemara seems to be a lot more severe, a lot more serious than the Rambam is presenting. So the question is, how is the Rambam learning this Gemara? How does he explain? How would he explain the idea of this woman dying and her kids dying because she was yesterday, just because she was a fool? I mean, it's one thing to be Machal Hashem, but to be a fool, okay, I mean, all of your kids are going to die because of that. So that's what I want to try to explain in the Rambam. Another question on the Rambam, which is how does the Rambam learn out from this Gemara his idea of what the flaw is of Yasser Midai? And also, the Rambam doesn't mention the Iyatam Rachmanim Bo Yosser Mimeni, but perhaps in our explanation of the Rambam at the end of the shir, we'll be able to explain how that fits into the Rambam Shita. Okay? So I hope we're all good and everybody's following. Any questions at this point? So I'm going to go through it again. All right, so I'll just
hey,
start the question.
Rabbi Ginsburg? According to the Ritva, why is it that the appropriate punishment, or at least like Rav Huna was saying, the appropriate punishment is that another child should die? Like maybe it should just go straight to her. Like why was it that first the children died? Any thoughts on that?
I don't have a svar for that. It's a good question. I'm just trying to explain the severity of the onesh, but I don't understand the particulars necessarily of why another child should die. But I'm trying to explain why it's so severe. Why would it be so severe? Because it's Chil Hashem, and when you're in the arena of Chil Hashem, so then it warrants a more severe punishment, a more severe onesh. But I do not have a svar for that. But good question.
Understood.
Excellent. Thank you, Ryan Faber. All right. So just another couple of questions, and then we'll get to the Rambam. We'll get to the answer, hopefully. So another question that I had, which is on the basic principles of the Gemara and the Rambam, is on Bechi. So the Rambam, the Gemara, they all say that the prescription for Avilus is 3 days of Bechi, and then 7 days of Hesped. But we see other cases, one from the Torah and one from the Gemara, where that's not the case, and the Gemara doesn't criticize these individuals. So one is by Aaron, and you can give an easy answer for this, but you'll see. Vayomer Moshe al Aaron, who asher divir Hashem lemor b'krovay kadesh al pnei cholam ekaved vayidom Aaron. So after Nadav and Avihu die, Aaron was told by Moshe in the name of Hashem that this is what Hashem meant when he said those who are close to me will die. And I'll gain glory through all the people. And Aaron was silent. So in that situation, you know, it seems like Aaron didn't really cry. The Ramban says that he cried a little bit. Shayaboka v'kol, v'ashasa. But then he was quiet. Okitam b'atidom bat einecha. Give yourself no rest, and your eyes no rest. So the question is, by Aaron, he didn't cry, and he's actually rewarded for not crying later on. It seems like the Torah is saying that this is the correct approach, and he didn't cry. He didn't follow the prescription of Chazal. So the question is, why not? Is he an Achzari? Was he an Achzari? Because the Rambam says that if you don't cry, and if you don't cry for 3 days, or you don't follow this prescription, it would seem like you're an Achzari. So was Aaron an Achzari? So you can answer and say that Aaron was in a unique situation. I think that's the easy answer. Aaron was in a unique situation where he was the Kohen Gadol and the time that it was going on would be inappropriate for him. But he's praised for this response. So I just want to understand, maybe we can understand with the Svara as to why he was praised for not crying in the situation, aside from his role as Kohen Gadol. But I have a stronger question from the Gemara. So Aaron's not such a great question because you can say, oh, he's a unique individual. He was in this situation. He's a Kohen Gadol. The situation doesn't warrant him crying. Fine. So you'll give that answer. But there's another Gemara in Shabbos, which is very strange, which is a stronger question. So the Gemara in Shabbos says, Rabbi Chanina, source number 10, Rabbi Chanina, Shkivalei Barate. So Rabbi Chanina's daughter died. Lo hava kabachi ala. So he didn't cry for his daughter when she died. So Amalei, the Vitu, Tarnagola Afeka Mibesach. So he was asked, is it just like a chicken left your house? I mean, you're basically not responding. Your daughter just died. You're not crying. It's almost like your response is equivalent to a chicken getting out of your house. So what kind of idea is this? How come you're not crying? So Amrullah Tarki, so he said that if I cry, I'll suffer twice. Kichla the Avira. So I'll have a bereavement, and also I'll be blind. So what is that? What is that talking about? So he said, "Suffer law kiha damar of Yochanan b'shem Rav Yosi ben Sarta." So he had the shita. This is Rav Chanina. He says, "Sheish dimosin." There are six types of tears. Shalosh yafos u'shalosh ros. There are three that are good and three that are bad. Shel ashan, the one of smoke. If you cry from smoke, it's not good. V'sheldachi, if you're crying, but what does that mean? Look at Rashi. He says, mitoch avel v'tzara. If you cry from avelus, from pain, so it's not good. It's ra'os. And then v'shel beit hakise, when you're in the bathroom, somehow tears come out of your face, out of your eyes. When you're in the bathroom, Rashi says over there, mitoch yisurin. A person's having, I guess, you know, bad stuff, bad pain, stomach pain. They're in the bathroom, and if you're crying there, that's not good for your That's not good for your eyes. It causes blindness. But he says, shall some drugs, vishal skok, the medicine, sorry, medicine, vishal skok, and laughter, vishal peros, yafos. But if you cry over these things, when you take medicine, it causes you to cry, or laughing, you're crying out of laughter, or peros, or if you're crying for a sharp fruit. So those are good types of tears. Those are tears, happy, good tears. So I just skipped the Rashi. So if you go to 12, it says, Tifla the Avira, Shiko Banim, the Ivarana Dima. So it'll cause death of children, and also it'll cause blindness of tears. So what is it talking about? What is the Gemara talking about? He's, the Gemara is saying that there are good tears and bad tears. The good tears are the tears of fruits and what else, and some and drugs and smoke, and the bad tears are bechi. And he says avil v'tzara, and that's why he didn't cry for his daughter, because he thought that it was bad to cry, that this is a negative type of crying. So this goes against the Gemara, and it goes against the Rambam, and it goes against the whole idea of social bechi v'shiva lehesped. I mean, he's a Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Chanina, and the prescription that Chazal set up for mourning is and he's just not crying. So what kind of idea is that of avoiding crying? And why is that not, he's not criticizing the Gemara for his response. So why don't we say that he was flawed, he did something wrong? So that's the question. And I'm trying to learn it that it's not really a medical. It's possible that it was medical, but I'm trying to learn it that it wasn't medical, that there's a philosophical idea tied to it. So that's the question. So we're pretty much finished with all the questions. So let me just summarize all the questions, and then we'll start answering all the questions and give a chiddush. So the questions are as follows. If you go back to the last three halachos and halachos of Gimel and Perek Avel, we have a lot of questions on these last three halachos. You know, what is this inability? Why are you not allowed to mourn more? And why is the Talmud Chacham different than the average person? What's the limit by a Talmud Chacham? By a Miskashi Yetzer Midai? The question is, what exactly is the flaw? Why does the Rambam say you're a tipesh? How do you connect that to the Gemara, where it seems like it's a lot harsher? And then also the ordering of the halachos. You know, why don't you have halachid aleph before halachid yud? Because that's the same flaw. And then also, finally, what's the flaw of the achzari? And we see in the Gemara that there was this Rabbi Chanina didn't cry. Was he an achzari? He's not criticized. So what is the flaw of an achzari? Why wasn't he criticized in the Gemara? And what is this illusion that we're supposed to consider when we're mourning of the sword, of the sword next to our necks, and the sword in the room? So what kind of illusion is that? If it's not really, if it's not really a reflection of hashgacha and how hashgacha works, because you know you don't always die because your family member died, or is that really true? What's the purpose of that? So those are all the questions, pretty much. I don't know if I got every single one, but those are all the questions. All right, so now we'll start with the answers. Anybody else have questions? Because I don't want to move too fast here. Any questions? Okay, good. Everything's clear. Excellent. All right. So what's the answer to the Rambam? How do we explain the Rambam? So one thing I noticed was that the Rambam, and I saw through some of the Nosi Kalim and the footnotes that I've read on it, that the Rambam has the same lashon that he uses by Avelos. He uses the same lashon in Hilchos Tshuva, and by the reference to Tkiyas Shofar. So if you look in source number 13, the Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva Parak Gimel Halacha Dalet, Alpha Pisha Tkiyas Shofar Rosh Hashanah Gzeiras HaKasuv. Even though it's a Gzeiras HaKasuv that we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Remez Yishvo. There's a hint to it. Klomar Uru Yishena Mishinatam and Yerdamim Hekitzu. So the Ram says that even though Tkiyas Shofar is from the Torah. It's a Derech HaKasuv, but there's a hint to it. And what is it? What is the hint? That a person is supposed to wake up from their slumber and their sleep and arise, hekitu arise, mitar demaskan, from your slumber again. The chasu maaseichem, and look into your actions and do tshuva and remember your Creator. Elu ashulchem es ha'emes behavle azman meshulgim kol shenasam behevel barik. Those who waste their time with vanity of time, time vanity, and they also are involved in wastefulness. Asher lo yoel v'lo yatzil, it won't have any effect and won't save. Habitul nashoseichem, look into your souls. Ve'kibud archeichem u'malaleichem, and do tshuva. Look at correct your paths and your deeds. V'yazil kol echa mikem darcho ra, and you should leave your negative ways. U'machshavaso asher lo tova, and abandon your negative thoughts, your thoughts that are inappropriate. So the Rambam, he uses the same exact lashon, because if you go back to source number one, the Rambam in Halacha Yud Beis, he says at the very end, by the tshuva of Avelis, he says, "Kol zeh lahakin asmo v'yachzor v'yeor mishinaso." The whole purpose of this whole illusion by the sword is that a person is supposed to prepare themselves and wake up from their slumber. So he uses the same type of lashon by tshuva. He says the purpose of shofar is that it's supposed to awaken you. He says uru yashena mishinaskam. He says the same type of idea, that a person is supposed to awaken from their slumber through shofar. And of course, as I mentioned before, the way the Rambam sets it up is that the first 3 days are the most, or I guess the tshuva days, are where the sword is against your neck. And those are days of Bechi. That's the prescription. Bechi is really the first 3 days of Avelus. And then the 7 days is Hesped. And then 30 days, Shloshim, is everything else. So what do we see? What's the comparison? What's the connection? Why does the Rambam use, or it seems like the Rambam's hinting that there's some commonality between the two. So I think that the fact that the Rambam uses the same lashon is trying to teach us an idea, and I think the idea is about bechi, the idea of cry. Because the idea of the shofar, if we all know or remember from Rosh Hashanah and from our Gemaras, is that the concept of shofar is that it's supposed to sound like a cry. I mean, it's Yilula Yalal or Gnuche Ganach, so it's supposed to sound like a cry, and of course there's a medrash about, you know, Sisra's mother. So the idea is that a cry, when a person hears a cry, so it's supposed to, it wakes you up. A cry, the sound of a cry, has an impact on a person emotionally. And the impact that the cry has on a person is one where it wakes you up from your slumber. It takes you out of your normal daily routine, and it's supposed to awaken your desire for change. And we see the same type of thing by Avelis, because the first 3 days are Bechi. The first 3 days of Avelis are Bechi. And similar to a shofar, where shofar is the sound of bechi, by Avelis, the bechi of the first 3 days is, it functions, and it naturally functions to awaken a person. Because when you hear a cry, it's hard to ignore it. It has an emotional impact on a person, and it naturally causes a person or drives a person to change. But by shofar, so this is the key, but by shofar, I think the idea is that the shofar itself, the fact that the cry is coming from the shofar, it allows the person, or it gives the person a boundary for change. Meaning the shofar is an idea of, or that it reflects different ideas of tefillah, it reflects ideas in the Torah. So the fact that the cry is tied to the shofar itself is really what drives the source of change. So when a person feels or hears a cry and they want to change, they're impacted by the cry, and the cry causes the desire to change. And it could be there's deeper psychological reasons. I mean, it could be you reflect on your own mortality, which is the common answer. But whatever it is, when you hear a cry, like the cry of a shofar, it drives a person to change. It's a driving force of change. But by Rosh Hashanah, the shofar itself is the entity that is the driving force for the change. So it kind of creates boundaries for the change. But I want to say that, and this is the key idea, I want to say that by Avelis, the cry comes from man, from the or a woman, for anybody who's being misabel over the mace. And that also will be an impetus. It will be a driving force for change. The problem with Avelis is that there's no entity of shofar to control the change. There's no entity that creates boundaries of change. So I think that explains, and this is, like, I think, the key idea, but I'll show you more. But I think that explains why the Rambam has this illusion, and the Gemara has this illusion of having the sword. I used to think that it was just an idea of reflecting on our own mortality, but I think there's a deeper idea based on this Rambam. I think the concept is that we need, even though Bechi is a driving force of change, it has to be boundaried. It has to be controlled, in a controlled setting, because too much change is negative. And I'll show you the idea later on as we go through this. But I think the key is that by the shofar itself is or functions to be the source of the change of the tshuva. And because it comes from the source, the shofar itself, it drives the direction of the change towards the good, towards changing yourself, changing your actions. Whereas by mace, we don't have that. We don't have the entity of shofar. So the Gemara and the Rambam are saying that you have to envision the sword in order to be careful in your tshuva, to realize that there's a danger. And if you don't direct your change properly, your tshuva properly, then you're going to go off the deep end. Then there's a danger there. So I think the idea of the sword isn't necessarily to reflect on your own mortality, but it's to give you the boundaries of the direction of change, that your change has to be controlled somewhat. And by shofar, the change is controlled by the driving force, by the shofar itself. The entity of the shofar is one that reflects ideas of the Torah and ideas of changing for the good. But by misa, it could go awry. And that's why the Rambam and the Gemara are, it's really the Gemara as the source, it's so emphatic that a person has to envision the sword next to his neck. The sword is there to put fear in man so that the tshuva that a person does in Avilus is a worthy tshuva, is a tshuva that's directed towards the good as opposed to, and I'll show you what I mean. So let's keep going in the Rambam, but that's a key idea. So one of the questions I asked also was that the Rambam doesn't mention that you're supposed to be a rachamim, that you shouldn't be more of a rachamim, rachmanim than God. That's the flaw of the Gemara. So if you look back in the Gemara in source number 6, at the very end, I bolded it. It says, "Yatem rachmanim bo yoser mimeni," that you shouldn't be a rachman more than me. And if you look at the Rambam itself, the Rambam kind of structures this halacha yid aleph and yid beis, very similar to Deos, because he has two extremes. First, he presents you with the extreme of excessive mourning, and then he presents you with the extreme of being cruel and not mourning at all. And then, so the proper approach is to be somewhat in the middle, it seems like, that Shlosh Levechi and Shiva Lehesped is more of the middle path. So the structure of the Rambam is very similar to the structure by Deos, where he has two extremes, and the prescription is the middle path, which is the appropriate level of Avilus. So I wanted to, so one of my questions was, the Rambam never incorporates the idea of Iyatem Rachmanim Bo Yoser Mimeni, and also the concept that a person is, that the concept of why, again, the concept from the Gemara that seems to be harsher than the Rambam. The Rambam just says you're a tipe. So what is the Rambam saying here? What's the Rambam's approach? So being that there seems to be a similarity in Deos, if you go back to Hilchos Deos, you see that the Rambam says by Rachamim, he says, Kach lamdu b'perish mitzvah zu, the mitzvah of following the ways of Hashem are mahu nikra chanun af ata hayachanun, mahu nikra rachum af ata hayarachum. You're supposed to imitate Hashem's actions in this world, and just like he's a chanun, you're supposed to be a chanun. Just like he's a rachum, you're supposed to be a rachum. Mahu nikra kadosh af ata hayakadosh. Just like he's separate, you're supposed to be separate. The aderech zu karu anavim lekel b'chol osam akinuyin erech apayim rav chesed tzadik yashar tamim gibor v'chazok v'yotavim leodiyo shein drachim togim yisharim v'chayim adam lahanik atzmobahan ulidamos elav kifi koko. So a person is supposed to imitate the actions of Hashem in this world. And one of the actions that's highlighted in the Rambam is rachamim, that a person shouldn't have excessive rachamim, but he shouldn't have too little rachamim, but a person should imitate Hashem. He should be in line with Hashem's will in the framework of rachamim. And the Gemara seems to highlight the same idea. The Gemara says that before, Iyatem rachmanim bo yoser imeni. So perhaps the Rambam, because we see that he brings down in Deos this idea of being a rachum like Hashem, and he's structuring the halachos by al yiskasha, al meso yoser midai, and then afzari, similar to Deos. Maybe the Rambam is saying that, what is the problem with yoser midai? What exactly is the flaw? It seems to me that the flaw, and why does he call him a tipesh? So it seems to me that the Rambam is teaching us a deep idea. He's saying that the flaw of miskasha yoser midai and the idea of minhago shel olam is that, like I said before, when a person dies, so you have this motivation to change, this bechi, this natural bechi, it causes the motivation to change. But oftentimes a person, he uses that and he goes too far. you start analyzing what happened, and you look for answers, and you start analyzing it, and you go beyond the reality of death, which is that it's a pattern and that it exists in the world. And when you go beyond, you're really, what's happening is you're a teepesh. What does that mean? It means that you're setting yourself up. You're following a path that'll lead you to philosophical disillusion, because you're following this path based on a misperception of death, and you keep going. And what ends up happening is that you're a teepesh. You're setting yourself up. You're not being rational. You're not being intelligent, and you're setting yourself up for a path that'll lead you down to a situation where you'll have no answers and you'll be philosophically distraught. So the idea that the Rambam is saying is Amiskashi Yosem Yidai is like a violation of being too much of a Rachamim, meaning that you should be like Hashem. You're taking yourself away from the path of Hashem by being too much of a Rachamim. Mahu Rachlam af Ata Rachlam. You should be a Rachlam like Hashem. The goal of mourning in this manner is for us to imitate the Rachamim of Hashem. And if we don't do that and we go to an extreme, so we're pulling ourselves away from Hashem because we're following a path that's going to lead us to philosophical disillusion, to being distraught. So I think that's the Chiddush in the Rambam. That's why he calls you a Tipesh, because there's a Rambam later on where he talks about, in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, where he talks about how a person's not supposed to bring up ideas that are really going to lead him down the path of philosophical mistakes. And he says that that person, he relies too much on his das. He doesn't realize the shortness of his das. So I think it's a similar idea here. So now just to put everything together. So what do I think, and answer all the questions, what do I think the Rambam is really saying? So I think the Rambam is saying that the flaw of Miskasha Mesa Yesumidai is that when a person misperceives death and puts too much emphasis on death, it leads the person, because of the impetus of change and the crying and the Bechi, it leads the person away from Hashem. And it leads the person down a philosophical path that will be ultimately lead to your destruction, or I guess a flawed philosophical path. And the whole source of that is a combination of the fact that you perceive death as being this horrible end, and also the impetus for change, the idea of bechi, of like shofar. Here you're supposed to do bechi, and you're going to feel the desire to change and the desire for the death to impact you. But when you go too far, you're moving away from Mahu Rachum. You're moving away from that, and now you're moving into an area where you're further away from the concepts, the true philosophical concepts and the true ideas of Hashem. And imitating Hashem is that. So that's the flaw, and that's why you're a teepesh. You're a teepesh because you don't realize how limited our knowledge is, and the search for answers and the search for change. Those things, as a result of Misa, are really the belief that you can solve this and you can figure this out are really a reflection of Kitzur Das, of the fact that we're just unable and we just lack the ability. So the Rambam is saying that on the one hand, that's the Chiddush, the Rambam. He's saying on the one hand, Aliskasher Al Mesu Yesumidai is the idea of a person moving away from God, a person using this avenue for change and for impact and moving them beyond and moving them away from Hashem. You're no longer a Rachlam like Hashem. And now you're in an arena where you're away, you're moved away, and now you're philosophically, the Misa itself is impacting your ability to see the true philosophical meaning of death. But on the other hand, the Rambam is saying you're an Afzari if you don't. Why? Because you have an opportunity to use the death and the Bechi of death for a powerful change. Because as we saw before, the Rambam says in Hilchos Teshuva by Shofar, that the sound of the shofar and the sound of bechi is a powerful tool for change. But when we use that tool for change, it has to be guarded. It has to be carefully guarded. And the way we guard it is through this illusion of the sword. We have to understand that this powerful impact and desire to change could go haywire. It could go awry. It could lead a person down a philosophical path that's dangerous. So on the one hand, we can't be miskasher yesumidai. We can't allow ourselves to go down this path of crying excessively. And maybe that's why it was so harsh in the Gemara. That's why she died and all her kids died, because she was going on the path of philosophical disillusion. She was going on the path of flawed philosophical ends. And that's why she deserved to die, because that's why her children deserved to die, because she was basically entering into a path of minus by excessively crying. And that's why the Rambam expresses it as tipesh, so So the Rambam is just like the Gemara. He's just learning that the Gemara's flaw isn't Chil Hashem. The flaw in the Gemara was that when a person cries excessively, they're really not using this powerful tool of change for the good, for the proper in the proper manner. They're using it to move away from Hashem, to move into an area, a philosophical area where they lack understanding and they lack meaning. So the proper approach, like the Rambam is saying, is that a person has to use the opportunity for change, which is the Bechi, the same as the Bechi of Shofar. But unlike Shofar, how do we control it? How do we make sure that our tshuva and our Bechi impacts us in a positive way towards the good? So that's the idea of the illusion. That's the concept that we have the sword by our neck. We're supposed to be afraid. We're supposed to be scared. It's an idea of controlling, creating boundaries for our desire to change. So I think that's the idea. And then the last point, perhaps, if there's going to be questions, hopefully. But the last point is, so what about the Talmud Chacham? What about that case? So I think that also makes sense, because by Talmud Chacham, we're not worried about a person going off the philosophical deep end. So by Talmud Chacham, your crying, your bechi is tied to the individual, is tied to the person's life and what he stands for. And when you remember the Chacham, it'll ensure the Chacham himself acts like the shofar. The Chacham himself will ensure that your desire to change will not be negative, will not lead you down the wrong path, but rather your desire to change will be kept within the good, within the idea of tshuva. So that is the why you can go longer with the Talmud Chacham, because that's not a flaw of Mitzkasher Yeser Midai. Now the problem with the Talmud Chacham is that it's not Yeser Midai, because we're not concerned that philosophically you're going to go, I keep using this, but you're going to go off the deep end. But the problem of Yeser Midai by a Talmud Chacham, there is no, it's not the same flaw by a Talmud Chacham. It's just that it's time to move on by a Chacham. It's not beneficial at a certain point. But we're not concerned about the flaw of Yeser Midai. So I think hopefully that explains the Rambam. But one last time to summarize. So again, the Rambam starts with Halacha Yud about the Talmud Chacham, then he goes into Miskasher Yeser Midai, and then he goes into the idea of Tshuva. So I just wanted to say that perhaps the Rambam's flaw of Miskasher Yeser Midai is the flaw of Tipshus, which is that a person's overestimating their ability to understand the death and to understand the reasons why and to go beyond that. And when a person does that, it's really harmful to a person. And that's why such a severe punishment occurred by the woman in the case of Rav Huna, because she was leading down a path of minus. A person has to realize that it's dangerous when a person goes beyond this path, because they're really taking death out of perspective. And that's the flaw of Yeser Midai. And that's why you're a tipesh, because you're overestimating your intellectual ability. You're overestimating your ability to figure this out, to find the reason. On the other hand, you have the opposite, that the chi is a powerful impetus for change. We see that by shofar. But the idea of the chi has to be controlled. The desire to change has to be under certain boundaries, guided by certain boundaries. And the boundaries of that bechi are created through this idea of seeing the sword and envisioning the sword in the room. All those are to remind you that your impact and the desire for change has to be guarded and has to be appropriated to the right place, to the appropriate place. I think that's it. Any questions? There's got to be a question.
Yeah. Rabbi Ginsburg?
Yes.
Yes, so Rabbi Ginsburg?
Wait, one at a time. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, you're saying is the desire to change is like you have to worry that you don't want to do that too much. But is it the change too much which is bad? Like, I don't see what, I see like if you're, like, are you trying to be looking about why did that happen? Then to what degree is that good at all? Or is the problem that you're trying to change too much, and is that what's bad?
I think that it's a good question. I think that when a person dies, I think that's why it's always by a child. I think all the cases were in the Gemara that I showed you were by a child. So I would say that the problem of Miskasher Yeser Midai is really that a person will look for answers. And I do think that that's the primary. But on the other hand, the Rambam is saying that you have the ability to use this for change, because the chi itself will create the impetus for change. So I do think that when a person is crying excessively, it's like a reflection of a misunderstanding of what happened. And that's an intellectual problem. where a person's going to be searching for the answers. I think that is common. So, I think that's the key by the Miskasher Yasumidai. But I do think that Bechi also has the ability to change man. So the Rambam is telling you or teaching us how to guide and the Bechi towards the proper results, the end goal. So, yeah. So I think that's the flaw. The flaw is more, I think, looking for answers. And that's why it's T-based. And I think that's, I didn't put the Rambam at the end, but the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, he says that when a person starts thinking about ideas like Mala Mata, Mala Snim, Mala Achor, ideas beyond our ability to perceive, so he says that that's like the beginning of Minas. And it says it's Gorim La'adam L'tardam in Olam. So I think it's the same type of idea here. That's the Tipshus. The Tipshus is that a person is trying to enter, when a person cries too much, it'll lead him into a situation where he enters into an area where he's which he can't answer, into, and he'll try to answer questions that he's limited in understanding. Hello? All right. Any other questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Question about the Radak on Yirmiyahu about Yehoyakim and Yehoyachin.
Yeah.
So if it's saying that there's things that are worse than death, like a life of tsar and bizayon could be worse than death, then if somebody sees someone who's in that situation, then why isn't there a halacha that they should cry for 3 days? Or why aren't there halachas of mourning for something that is worse than death? There should be the same kind of halachas of crying for such a situation. And on the flip side of that, it sounds like it's making an argument that there's a point where euthanasia might be the most rahmanas, you know, to take somebody out of that situation and put them into death, which is better. That might be the most kind thing to do for a person at a certain point. So,
good question. So I'll answer. Good questions. So one answer is that the halacha, I don't think, could create a situation where it's too detailed. I don't think halacha can create all the situations where, you know, where you should cry for 3 days or where you should compare. It's just too, there's too many situations where, which halacha can't, can't address. I mean, there's too many details. Like, when should you do it? When shouldn't you do it? What's the situation? This is a unique situation where he was sent into Gullis and his life was terrible. But what's the quality of terrible life where, you know, where this should apply halachically? It's just hard to, I think, codify. And then the other question of euthanasia, I mean, it might be better for the person but that there's other flaws, there's other problems with euthanasia, which is like we don't have a right. That end of being better for the person might not necessarily justify this philosophical flaw of murder. And so I think that's, yes, it might be better for the person, but just because something's better for the person doesn't mean that there's not a flaw of the maisa, of the act of killing somebody. So you have these two competing factors, and halacha says that killing somebody is worse, you know? So you have to be concerned about the effects of murder and the meaning of murder. Even though it might be better for the person, there's still a flaw to murdering a human being. It's still denying the Bria, that the person is really a reflection of God, despite the fact that it might be better for the person ultimately. So you don't have a right to do that. All right, any other questions? Yeah, no problem. Come on.
Yeah, Ginsburg?
There you go, yes.
So I think, did you explain why Rav Huna said to the woman that her sons are going to die or that she's going to die? Like, how did, according to the Rambam, how did he know
so
that?
I'm saying that the fact that, my main point is the fact that she and her sons are going to die shows you that this flaw is really severe. So the question is, what about this flaw makes it so severe? So I said before, the Ritva is showing us that it's Chilul Hashem, but the Rama maintains that if a person cries excessively, it's a path to Minas. And the Rama is saying that tipshus, it's like dumb. You're starting off with something that's part of humanity, part of the pattern of the world, and you're going to take it too far. It's going to lead you down this philosophical path of Minas. And I think that's what the Rama is hinting to, and that's why I can't explain specifically, you know, why her sons and her, I mean, you could say there, according to the Rambam, that, I mean, if she was a min, then her sons would probably be affected by that, and it would create a situation where her sons would also be minim, and therefore it was warranted that her family die. But I can't really, you know, we can't explain the complete justice, but at least we can see why it's so bad. You know, why is it so severe? So I think the Rambam's idea of the severity, even though it sounds like he's not saying it's so severe because he says you're just a tipesh, but I think it's more severe than just a tipesh. I think the severity is tied to the fact that you're really limited in your knowledge in these areas, and you're overanalyzing the death. And when you do that, by overanalyzing the death, and going beyond the limits of man's knowledge, and you're really going down the path of minos, and that's reflected in excessive crying. When a person is grieving too much, it's like they can't understand why. That's a typical question. People always ask that question. These are normal emotions that a person feels. Why did this happen? Why did this happen to me? People always, I know for myself, you know, people ask me like philosophical questions when my daughter was sick, and for some reason, death, especially by a child, it raises a lot of philosophical questions. And the Rambam is saying that these philosophical questions are really philosophical questions that are not warranted. And also, not only that, but they're not really going to lead you towards a true idea of Hashem. They're just going to lead you away. So I think that's why it was so severe. And that's why I was bringing in Mahu Rachlam. The Gemara says, Iyata Rachmanim Yosar Bomimeni, and the Ram doesn't say it straight up, but he does structure the halakha similar to Deos, and in Deos he mentions that kind of like a middle path is really the right path, and if we go beyond that, if we're too much Rachamim, so that's a negative. So the idea is that in the negative is in the sense that you're not really imitating God, you're further away from the actions of God. So I would say that that's the flaw here, that you're moving further away from God when you overanalyze Misa, and that's reflected in excessive mourning. When you're crying too much. Does that answer the question? Hello?
Again?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. How do you explain to Rav Hanina? Why did Rav Hanina not?
Oh,
cry
great question. Not to mention that. Thank you. Yeah, I think that's the idea of Rav Hanina. I think the idea of it being bad for the eyes, I think that means that Rav Hanina himself, he knew that crying for him would have affected his perception. I think that's the idea of blindness. Blindness doesn't mean physical blindness, but it means philosophical blindness. It means that for him or for Aaron, like crying for them would just be in their minds, would just impact their ability to see things clearly, to see reality clearly. So in their minds, this was really a negative. They were on the level where crying itself would have been a negative, and that's the blindness. The blindness of Rav Hanina is that concept. It's a blindness of perception. It's the blindness, it's the idea of, somebody's calling on the line, one second, sorry. It's the idea of Rav Hanina recognizing within himself that if he gave into this cry, that it would affect his ability to perceive Torah appropriately, perceive reality appropriately. So that's what he was saying. But in general, a normal average person, this is natural. It's natural to cry, and you should instead of, and it might cause. That's what I was saying for the Rambam. Ali Skasha Yosumidai. It might cause some lack of clarity and blindness, so to speak. But on the other hand, it might cause lack of clarity. But on the other hand, a person needs this. An average person needs this. But by Aaron or by Rav Hanina, so these individuals, they recognize that it would be inappropriate for them to cry because crying would just impact their ability to see things clearly. And that's what they needed to do in their situations. Also with the, that's a hard Gemara because I don't know what the bathroom, I mean, I think the bathroom things also, like how you approach Yisurin, because the Rashi says Yisurin, how you approach Yisurin also has like an impact on how you perceive Hashem and how you perceive the world. And that was the bathroom case where it's negative. And the other case that was negative was, let me just find that. What was the other case? It was the case of, I got it right here. Shlosha Rose, Ashan Bichi, and Shal Beis Akisei. I don't know what Ashan really means, but I don't know what all these mean, but I can explain why Avel would be a negative in terms of blindness, because he's saying that Bichi could have the potential to affect the clarity of your perspective, of your perception. So the Rambam is saying, that's why it fits into the Rambam. He's saying, again, that when a person when a person cries, you have to be careful. That's what I'm saying. You have to be careful when you cry. You can't cry too much, meaning that there's a blindness to Bechi. That Bechi causes blindness because a lot of times you can't see reality properly. You start overanalyzing, overestimating the importance and the relevance of this death to the point where you can't see things clearly. And that's the tipshus, where you go beyond beyond what man's capable of understanding. So I think that's the idea there. So that's why they're not criticized, because for them, this would create blindness, meaning for them, it would be a situation where the Bechi would actually hinder their ability to see things clearly, to understand things clearly. But for most people, we need to cry. It's just natural to cry. But if we go too far, then we can't see clearly. The crying affects our vision. It affects our perception, not our vision literally, but our perception. And same thing with, and I think that's what the Rambam is highlighting. But on the other hand, crying has a great effect, and it could be effective in changing man. So we have to utilize cry in order to effectuate change in man, but we have to recognize the dangers of crying and how excessive crying leads us to misperception and almost like a blurring of our vision, a blurring of our perception. So, yeah, thank you. Thanks for that question.
Rabbi Ginsburg?
Yeah.
But still, why wouldn't they, like Chanina, take the middle path? Like, why isn't this being achzari, like Ram says?
Right. I would say that an achzari, it's a good question. I mean, I guess the idea is that he could effectuate change, or I guess do a tshuva, without the crying, because he felt in his mind the crying itself would hinder his ability to do tshuva, because the crying would just make him not see things as clear as he could, and he wanted to have a clear mind in order to do tshuva. But I would say he found achzari. It doesn't say that he didn't do tshuva or he wasn't affected by it. He just didn't cry, meaning that an achzari is a person who's not affected, who doesn't utilize the death, the misa, for change. And Rav Chanina, he could have used it for change. He just didn't need the cry, and in fact, the cry would be harmful for him. So for him, on his level or to his understanding of himself, crying would not help him in his tshuva, and having clarity of mind would be better. But for the average person who needs to cry, whose natural reaction is to cry, you should allow yourself, you should give into that, and just use it properly, use it for change.
Are you saying he was on a very high level, or he had some sort of personality quirk or something that made it not good?
No, I'm saying he's on a high level, because I'm saying for him, he understood himself that if he were to cry in this situation, it wouldn't help his tshuva, it would hurt his tshuva. Because for him, crying would have affected his perception. Crying would have affected his clarity of thought, his clarity of mind, and it would have impacted the way he to change, the ability to change. So for him, on his level, I'm saying that's why he didn't cry. He understood himself, and on his level, that crying would be a negative, and it wouldn't actually assist him in doing tshuva. So I'm saying he's on a higher level, not a personality quirk.
What about like Avram Avinu? Like he, Avram Lispodasar of Liv Kosa. So he's on a high level, but he still cried.
Right. So I would say that perhaps for Avram, he viewed it as a good for him. Maybe he understood that crying, I'm saying on an individual, from an individual level, by an idea of a tzaddik or a chacham, you have to analyze whether crying will effectuate change in a more potentially positive way or not. So I would say that by Rav Chanina, perhaps he understood his personality as such that crying would be a negative for him, that giving into the cry would actually harm his tshuva because he couldn't see things clearly. Whereas by Avram, he understood that crying at that moment would really propel him to doing tshuva. So perhaps Avram understood it differently. I'm saying each person has
maybe
to
also,
yeah,
right, but maybe right. Also like for Sarah, that's like the Talmud Chacham case where there's like no danger
right.
Of,
right. That's also,
but like for a child, for a baby, it's like different. It doesn't have the element of Talmud Chacham. Maybe that's also a difference in the cases.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah, by Talmud Chacham, you don't have the fear of a person going into the negative sphere, you know, philosophically. So that's why it was appropriate for him to cry. All right.
Can I ask a different question?
Yeah, sure.
If the problem is that a person will have asked questions, when you cry, you're going to ask questions which you don't have answers to. So couldn't that be a greater risk by Talmud Chacham? Because why is the Talmud Chacham dying?
Right. So I would say that if you're being maspid a Talmud Chacham and you're crying over the Talmud Chacham, That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that thinking about the Talmud Chacham's life and what he represented will prevent you. I would say that would be a preventative for, you know, for this idea. For it'll be a strong preventative for the idea of this feeling unjust and having these questions. You're just saying why? I'm not sure. I just think that a Talmud Chacham I'm kind of equating a Talmud Chacham to a shofar. That a Talmud Chacham is like a shofar. A shofar is an entity where it's clear, you know, where the driving force, what is trying to drive you to towards tshuva, towards fixing yourself, improving yourself. And I think the Talmud Chacham, the fact that it's applied to that misa, almost functions in itself like the shofar. It's the driving force, so it'll keep you in line. So that's what I don't know. That's how I'm interpreting it.
I see.
Yeah. All right.
Rabbi Ginsburg, could you answer the Vayidom Aaron question about his life?
He said he has... I would say it's the same idea that Aaron understood. Well, I would say it's a little different by Aaron. Good question. It's a little different by Aaron. Aaron, I think, understood, had some greater insight because he was in communication with Moshe, who was in communication with Hashem. So Aaron perhaps did have philosophical answers that we can't perceive. And because he was capable of understanding, because of the Nevuah to Moshe and his relationship, because he was capable of understanding why his children died to some extent. So that's why the cry wasn't really, he didn't really need to cry. There was no idea of crying by him. There was no questions. And he cried very little because he understood the reality. He understood, you know, the why. And that's what Moshe is teaching him. He's saying, he's giving him a reason. He's giving him an idea as to why his children died. So he was given that insight, as opposed to us, to most people who aren't given that insight. And then we just go down this path of perpetual like questioning and not understanding. Whereas Aaron, he was given that insight. So the idea of the cry was minimal. He cried because of the emotional impact, because it was his nature to cry, but he was quiet. He was silent because he could accept the idea of why they died. So yeah, it's a good question.
Rabbi Ginsburg.
Yes.
The case of Yosser Medai by the woman with seven children. So her punishment was because it was a Chil Hashem, because she was presenting the case that, or projecting the case that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was unjust. So in her punishment, doesn't that engender to everyone else that's from the outside looking in that her perception really was correct? That God really, Chas v'Shalom, is acting in an unjust way? I mean, the punishment the punishment seems to engender more of what she's doing.
I hear your question, but she was warned. She was told not to do this by Talmud Chacham Rav Huna, and she ignored the warning. So it's not like there is a justice there. She was told this is what's going to happen to you if you continue crying, and she ignored that. So there is justice there because she ignored the warning. So I would say there is justice. And I would say also, just to explain that case, I think the Ritva, you know, there is some justice also in the sense that because this woman's child died and she used that as a vehicle of Chilul Hashem, the idea of her children and her family being this idea of Chilul Hashem, they would always be associated with Chilul Hashem if she didn't stop crying. So I think that's why the onus was so severe, because she and her family were now perpetually associated with this idea of Chilul Hashem. According to the Rambam, it's different. It's because she as a parent has this influence on her children, and if she's mourning excessively, there's a severity to that in the sense that you're allowing yourself to go down this path of philosophical mistake. So I think that's the idea. So those are the two ways of learning the Gemara. But to answer your question, I think the fact that she ignored the warning of Rav Huna shows you that there is justice here. That's not really unjust. I mean, he sent her a letter. He said, stop. And if you don't stop, your kids are going to die. So, I mean, she kind of chose how she wanted to react to that situation. It does seem harsh, but I'm trying to explain the harshness of it.
You mean you're saying not only did she not follow the advice, but she ignored the Sivoy of Talmud Chacham, that also?
Exactly, yeah. She ignored his Sivoy, so there is justice because she ignored his. It's not like she was doing something and she wasn't told, don't do this, and she ignored the Sivoy. She was told how severe the punishment would be. He even said to her, you're going to have another mace, but she kept going on. So I would say that mitigates the lack of justice here.
I mean, you're saying that people from the outside would not say that that was unjust because they knew the consequence.
Yeah, exactly. Because she knew the consequence and she ignored it. So that's not unjust. She's making a choice. She's choosing to continue on.
All right. Okay, thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah. Just another point here, not a question, but Hindi pointed out on the just for other reasons, he quoted the Ritva on Banim Atam Hashem Elokeichem Lo Tisgodu. There's the Ramban there, and the Svarno and the Ibn Ezra give some other reasons for Losasim Karcha Beneichem Lo Meis, just on different reasons why you shouldn't be Kashi Yoter Midai.
Okay, what are they?
Yeah, it's the what are they?
Yeah. Well, I'll look it up after.
Yeah,
after.
Take a look. Yeah. It's not the.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Were any of those the ideas that I said in this year?
No, the Ramban is more on just denying the soul.
Oh, okay.
Svarno has this funny thing that you have. You always have a karov that's closer. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Right.
Which is interesting. Another area of learning.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, I'll look into it. Thanks. Thank you. All right.
Thank you, Evan Ginsberg.
Thank you, everybody. Everybody, be safe and have a good day. Thank you.